is Over the Garden Gate, a program brought to you by the University of California Cooperative Extension Master Gardener Program of Tuolumne County. The mission of the UCCE Master Gardeners is to provide research-based gardening information to the public. If you would like to contact our Master Gardener Program, please call our hotline, which is area code 209-533-5912. The hotline is not manned full-time, but we do pick up our messages and we will get back to you within the week.
So my name is Kathy Scott and I'm a soil scientist. I work for the NRCS, which is the Natural Resources Conservation Service. We're part of the USDA, a federal agency, and we were formerly called the Soil Conservation Service. So I'll talk a little bit about the geology of our area. This is a geology map of this part of California, and I just want to call your attention to, this is the foothill area here where all the stripes are, and this is the coastal range where all the stripes are. You will know if you walk across the land here or you drive across the landscape that the geologies change quickly as you move across the landscape. And that is because our geology tends to be vertically oriented, whereas in many parts of the world, geology is laid in a horizontal fashion. You'll have silt, you'll have sandstone, you'll have some less on top. Well, here it's vertical. So this is a little cartoon of the geology in the Murphy's area. So as you go from this part of the county to this part of the county, you will travel quickly through areas of metamorphic stuff from metavolcanic. This is slate. This is metasedimentary. This is topped by a lahar deposit, and on and on until you get up into the granite areas at the higher elevations. And it is tilted that way because of the tectonic plate movement. And you probably are aware that the ocean tectonic plate and the California plate are moving towards each other. So soils are being formed on the ocean floor from little fissures or large fissures in the floor, and the material cools and forms rock and sediments on the ocean floor. And then that floor, through the movement of the plates, is constantly being subducted underneath California, right where our coast is. So as that happens, all this plate stuff from the bottom of the ocean gets stacked up. And when it gets stacked up, it kind of gets smushed like this. And so over the eons, this is how we've ended up with this very, you know, so in the ocean floor, these would be this way. But then as it gets scraped off onto the state, they become more and more vertical. So that accounts for why when you're walking across the landscape, you can go, oh, you know, I am standing on a little area of serpentine. I can see that. And then right there, that changes. And now I'm in greenstone, where you get those little tombstones that are common in the lower elevation of the survey. It's just boom, 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 boom. And every time you change that geology, you're probably changing the soil type. So it was very complicated mapping in this area because of that. So it's just interesting. We have a giant variety of geology here. It makes it all more fun to work in. But a lot of times you'll meet people and they have, well, even me, I have different soil in my front yard than I do in my backyard because the geology changes, and it's it makes it interesting. All right, the next factor that affects soil formation is relief. And relief refers to, as I mentioned, the slope of the landscape, the shape of the landscape, convex versus concave, aspect, whether it's north-facing or south-facing. These all have large effects on the soil that develops from it. So with the slope shape, if you can imagine a hill, the top part of the hill up here, even though it rains the same amount on the top of the hill than it does on the side or the bottom, the water tends to run off this top part and down into this. So the soil up here tends to be a little younger and scabbier looking and shallower because the effective rainfall is much less. It hits the surface and it kind of runs off. And some goes in, but a lot of it ends up moving down the hill. So these, plus just the fact that it's on the top and it tends to lose stuff from erosion, the top soils tend to be much more shallow. You get deeper as you go down the side. And then at the very bottom, you end up with a lot of material that came off of that top stuff and ends up piling up at the bottom, and your slope evens out, and that's where a lot of your very productive agricultural soils are. So in this little cartoon here, this shows, this is the soil material and this is bedrock. The soil up here tends to be very shallow, and you'll a lot of times have shrubs up here and not so much trees, depending on the elevation that you're at. And then the trees on the cool aspect, the north aspect, there's more, it's able to hold on to the soil moisture longer. The trees are able to have more moisture to grow. So the trees tend to be thicker on the north side than they are on the south side. Soil tends to be a little bit thicker as well. And then down in here, you start getting where people want to put vineyards and whatnot in the bottom part, because you can see how deep the soil gets here. So, and then it repeats itself. The next little knoll, you get the same sort of pattern. Anyway, soil scientists use these sort of drawings and schematics as we try to understand the soils of an area. We do a lot of sketching, and coupled with holes that we dig to try to ground truth. Okay, why is the soil different here than here? And so we're thinking of all these different factors that I'm talking about and trying to make the model of why and where these soils occur across the landscape.
So if somebody wants to put in like an orchard or a vineyard or mm-hmm. something like that, before they buy the land, should they ask somebody from your agency?
It would be really smart to do that. One of the most common uses for soil surveys is prospective land purchases. Mm-hmm. So, you know, as part of your investigation of the land, it would behoove you to either go onto the website and do it yourself or come into our office and we can help you, you know, walk you through it to see what the soil potential is on that land. And then if you have uses in mind for that land, there's probably a table for that. And it will tell you whether that soil is well-suited, moderately well-suited, poorly suited. And if it's poorly suited, it will tell you why. And so then you'll have an idea of what do I have to do to overcome this. If I still want to buy it, is it because of the large stones on the surface? Well, I can remove those. I can do that. Or it might be too cost prohibitive. I mean, you can almost do anything with any soil if you have enough money to change that soil, you know. But it's a really good place to start. Yeah.
Does your office also then do like percolating tests for the land? I mean, you said that soils can be very different from spot to
right.
spot.
When it comes down to a home site where you want to place a septic system, that requires a much more on-site investigation, and you would be better off hiring somebody to do that. Our soil survey will get you in the ballpark of whether or not that land is going to be suitable at all, you know. And again, it's on you whether you want to try it anyway, but it might give you some lead notice about, okay, these are challenges we're going to see. But then when it comes down to, okay, I want the house here, and where am I going to put my septic system, then you better get somebody out there to do a perk test like you're talking about, because the scale that we map at is meant to be viewed at a scale of 1 to 24,000, which is fairly broad. I could show you a map after I'm done yammering.
Okay.
And, you know, I mean, like this piece of property, You can only make the the line around the landscapes just so small before they become kind of useless. So our lines are a little bit broad for specific home site stuff. So it's a good first cut. And then after that, you better hire somebody to go actually walk it and poke a hole on your land because the soil's changed so rapidly.
I see.
What about prospecting gold?
We don't really have anything to do with that.
No help on that, huh?
No help on that.
So you couldn't tell me where I can find the nuggets?
No, I couldn't. You know, what will help you is a geology map, you know, because there are certain veins of geology that are more likely to bear gold than others. But then you're talking something that is generally below the soil surface. And since we are only really interested in the top couple meters of soil, 5 feet or so, we don't go that deep. So that's not our focus.
You're not a geologist then,
are
you?
No, I'm a soil scientist. I have geology training because that is so important to what soils develop and where. But nope, I'm not a geologist. Call a geologist. All right. So what I might do now is just give you a little bit more information about Webb Soil Survey before I show you the different boxes and we can talk about the different soils that I have brought here. But I have some handouts that if you're interested in accessing the Webb product, it'll walk you through that. And if you get confused, you can always call our office. And let me hand them out now before I forget, because if I get talking, and anybody else interested in? It's free. You can produce some pretty slick reports if you are a consultant or a real estate person. They have been known to go online and check out the soils on an area. And this application has a really neat report generator where you basically zoom in to the land that you are interested in, and then you tell it what the uses are or what you want to know about that land, and you say, give me a report, and it will print out the map with a scale, very professional looking. Mm-hmm. I should have brought an example of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then it'll give you tables of the things that you said you were interested in, and it'll rate the soils for those and tell you what the challenges are that you have to overcome, if there are any, for the use. Or you can do a report that says, okay, I want to know approximately how much sand is in the upper foot of the soil for some reason, or how much clay, and you can get a report of that. You can get a report of the pH, just so many different things. And you can go in there and kind of poke around and look at all the different reports. There's a big menu on the left, and there's also a really cool glossary that will explain terms that will pop out in the reports that maybe you don't understand. There's more than you ever wanted to know about soil survey in there, probably, that'll explain some of the more jargony kind of terms.
So if we put in, for instance, our own property, which mm-hmm. is about 2 acres, maybe a little more,
mm-hmm.
but it goes from the road above
mm-hmm.
to the road below, and it's quite a bit of different elevation.
Mm-hmm.
So would going online and looking this up, could they tell us our actual elevation and what the soils are like at one elevation
mm-hmm.
compared to lower?
Yep.
Okay.
So what will happen in that case, here's a soil map. What you will get is this is too small for anybody to see, but there's a map and there are lines on here that are very light colored. And so you would find your property, and you can zoom in further than
this
if you like.
This would be on the website.
This will be on the website. And what you get is you get the entire country.
Oh.
And what you do is you zoom in, you can put in your address, you can put in a landmark, you can put in latitude and longitude. There's a lot, or you can manually just zoom in until you find your house.
But eventually you'll end up with a view in your screen that you're like, okay, this is where I am. And those lines will probably be cutting across your property, so there'll be a different soil type at the upper part than at the lower part.
Okay.
And there's different information associated with each one of those parts.
Mm-hmm.
So when you click on it, it'll open up a window that tells you about the part that you're clicking on.
I see.
Interesting. Yep.
Very nice. Thank you.
So would you say when they give the pH that it's kind of an average for that? That if you had some specific requirements for plants you want to grow, you'd still get it tested?
Yes. And so that's an important point, is with the functionality of this, it does sort of give you an average. It'll either give you, you actually choose. You say, I want the average pH in the upper 6 inches, or I want it in the upper foot, or I want it just for the dominant soil in that delineation, because a soil delineation usually will have more than one soil. One might be more acidic than the other. So when it comes down to very site-specific stuff like that, you can get in the ballpark for the land as a whole on your property. But when it comes to, it's changing, as you know, from different parts of your garden, depending on what you've been doing use-wise, it's going to tell you what the native soil would be on average. But then, in areas that have been manipulated highly, you definitely should either take it down and get a soil test, or you can buy pH test kits. And pH is hugely important to a gardener, because the availability of nutrients changes as you go more acidic and more alkaline. And most plants prefer it within a certain range of pH. And there are things you can do to alter the pH. But if your pH is out of whack, you'll get all kinds of deficiencies or toxicities in your plants that you're putting on fertilizer. Well, because of the pH, that fertilizer, those nutrients are not plant available. And so, I mean, it's not really rocket science. You know, it really just comes down to getting
a
pH.
It's
a little complicated. I do have a few kind of handouts on soil pH and nutrient availability that I'll put out. You can take it home, and it kind of gives you the sweet spot range that most garden plants are happy with, and it'll show you at which pHs things become more deficient and which become more available or even up to the toxic level. And it's just a cute little graphic that I'll give you as a handout.
Thank you.
So if you don't mind, let me just run quickly through some of the more common soil types in our area. This graphic up here, I diverge a little bit, is sort of showing where some of the more common soils are found, and they are tied pretty closely to geology and elevation, precipitation, all those things that we talked about as being soil-forming factors. So the first soil I'm going to show you is down in this area, and the last ones will be higher elevation. So just kind of keep that in mind. So this is a soil that we call amador, and it has developed from rhyolitic tuff, and this tends to be down in the Valley Springs area. This is a very light rock. It's called an extrusive igneous rock, and extrusive means that it formed at the surface of the land. So this came out as a kind of a lava flow type thing, and it cooled and hardened on the surface. And when a rock does that, they don't produce like the big crystals that you see in an intrusive rock that develops under the crust. So this tends to have very low pH soils develop from it. This soil is called amador. And a little word about the names of our soils. And this is maybe getting a little nerdy, but if you look at the soil survey online, you will see that there are names associated with the soils. And we call these names series. And it's sort of analogous to a species of animal or plant. So This soil is called Amador. And there is a place that you can go that will tell you exactly the characteristics of an Amador soil. It has a classification like a plant does. And so its scientific name is loamy, mixed, superactive, thermic, shallow, typic haplozereps. And every single part of that name means something to a soil scientist. And and that gives you the key of how that soil developed. But in everyday conversation, you don't want to say that. So we give these guys little short handle names, and this one is named Amador because it was first described in Amador County. And it has certain characteristics. This particular beast tends to be on low rolling hills. It's derived from this. Tends to have just grasslands on it, very few trees. It's shallow. This next little beast here is called Bonanza. This is developed from the greenstone soils, the metavolcanic soils that are still down in that lower reach of the county, down in this low rolling hill part, this red stuff. And what metavolcanics are is it's metamorphosed basalt. So under intense heat and pressure, basalt changes chemically and physically into this metamorphic rock. And you can see it tends to have kind of greenish color and some reds. And the soil that develops from it is also quite red. It tends to have a good amount of clay in it. This tends to have the grassland, but also some scattered oaks. You start picking up more and more oaks in this stuff. This next one is a serpentine soil, and this soil is called Crimea House, and it develops from our state rock, serpentinite. And this is a product of low-grade metamorphism, and they call it serpentinization of mafic rocks, mafic meaning dark. The soils that develop off the serpentinite tend to be very challenging to plants of all stripes because the minerals in here tend to be very high in magnesium. They're considered magnesic soils. And what that does is the magnesium overwhelms the what we call the soil solution in the soil, and it pushes out like calcium and other good, you know, plant needed nutrients and just overwhelms them. So all the magnesium kind of shoves off all the stuff that plants usually need to thrive. And what you end up with for a plant community on this is very scrubby stuff, chamise, maybe some struggling gray pines. Just looks terrible. And that's because it's kind of a toxic environment, and it all comes from the minerals that weather right out of this. So in an example of looking for a plot of land to buy, you're not going to change this into anything good without millions of billions of dollars, because it's just inherently not going to be anything good.
Well, there's a lot of that up in the Red Hills,
and yet
the wildflowers are just...
Right, and there are certain plants that are adapted to that sort of challenging environment, and there are certain plants that live only there. And they're adapted to outcompete and thrive where other plants, you know, and it gives them a little toehold. It's like their special place, you know. So,
interesting.
Yeah. This next soil is, it's called the Tombs soil, and this is what is up on top of Table Mountain. And this is laetite. This is the bedrock. Laetite is an igneous extrusive rock. It's formed up on that ridge, and a lot of you may realize that ridge that is Table Mountain is actually the bottom of an old stream bed, and that's why it looks sort of riverine. That was laid down when there were higher hills above what is now Table Mountain, and this material, when it was molten, came down into that riverbed, solidified, became a very, very hard rock. And through the eons, the high hills around them, which were softer, have eroded away. And so now what is left is this thing that looks like an upside down river, which it is. And it's so hard that the soils don't develop very quickly up there. They're all fairly shallow, and there's just as much rock up there as there is soil. You know, it's
and yet there's a beautiful wildflower.
And part of that is because of the topography. You've got this undulating topography that tends to trap water in the spring and promote a lot of wildflower profusion. You know, because of that water trapping availability. And the nutrients are not bad up there. This rock is not bad nutrient-wise. So, let's see, the next one I've got here is called Hetchy. And this is a low hills, oak savanna. It develops off of the slate belt. And we have a lot of slate in this area. It tends to be kind of down through the middle here, interrupted by areas of that bonanza soil. So we go bonanza, Hetchy, bonanza. And that's because of that vertical alignment of our geologies. So this tends to be 20 to 40 inches deep to bedrock. It's a very common soil. You're getting into more of the mixed oak woodland as you go up there. So the vegetation changes. Let's see. This one is called a Wally Hill. This develops off of, here's an example of slate. It's a quite hard, foliated kind of rock, and it is metamorphosed shale. And this is schist. It's also metamorphosed. This is the soil that develops from the schist. What do I want to say about that? So the schist is also can be from metamorphosed shale, but it has more of the minerals in it, like mica and talc, that are slippery and plate-like. So if I broke this rock on the way here because it's so fragile. There's another piece. But the minerals are all plate-like, and so the soil from it is a different kind of soil. It has fragments that are plate-like. The mineralogy is a little different. It tends to be slipperier. So just another example of how things change with rock type. And this one tends to be up in the mixed conifers and oaks as well. This is a granodiorite rock, and this is what we call a mafic rock, which is dark colored, as opposed to a felsic rock, which is granite. These are very closely related, but the dark minerals are a lot more common in this. These tend to weather into much more fertile soils than these do. This is predominantly quartz, which is kind of an inert mineral. And most granite soils are not very fertile. There's too much sand. Clay is where all the action is as far as fertility goes. These weather into more clays. So related but different and found in the same areas. And it just depends on what minerals were in that magma when it kind of came up. So the soils, very different. You know, you've got a red, very nicely developed soil versus just a little gray guy.
What was the name of that soil?
The rock is diorite or granodiorite.
And what was the name of the soil?
Music, M-U-S-I-C-K. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for being so attentive.
Great lecture.
You've been listening to Over the Garden Gate, a program presented by the UCCE Master Gardeners of Tuolumne County. I'm Linda Reevely. Thank you for being with us. If you would like to contact us for more information, remember you can contact our hotline, which is area code 209-533-5912, or you can look us up on the kaad-lp.org website. Look for Over the Garden Gate. Thank you.